You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think for him as a player, when he looks at the overall body of his work and how he's elevated his game, I think for any player like that who's gone from, you know, a fourth line cast off to, again, like the best left wing in the game, I think you want to be remembered for more than just being the guy who makes all the highlight reels for licking a dude in the face, something like that. I think that does mean a lot to him for any player that I think that has put in that work to get to that spot. So, yeah, it's a tough situation, you know, for him, and that, you know, again, it's of his own doing, right? Like, of.
Hello and welcome to the Brews and Bruins podcast. It's me, Drew Johnson. I am back. Ha! Boom. I got Drew Bledsoe poster behind me. We're ready to go. But yeah, as usual, I'm here with Chris Gear and Cam Hasbrook, who you probably heard last week. Lovely, lovely without me. We got Connor Ryan, man who needs no introduction. And he's going to answer all our questions, and we'll just agree blindly with his correct answers. how you doing, Connor?
I'm doing swell. How you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, all things considered.
All things considered, yeah.
It's a pretty big news day here on Monday that we're recording for the Bruins. But before we jump into those, what are you guys drinking? Chris, I see you got something right there.
So I think this is the first time I've had this on the pod. But this is like kind of one of the original San Diego IPAs. We got the Ballast Point Sculpin. It's become one of the better known ones over the course of the years. But when I first moved to San Diego, it was a pretty niche San Diego thing, and ownership's changed over the years. But as far as I can tell, the recipe seems about the same. So it's like really hop forward, really piney, even a little bit of like grapefruit flavor to it. And then later they did the grapefruit Sculpin, which I think is probably my favorite iteration of the beer because it kind of just accentuates that flavor. But on its own, pretty classic. I haven't done a like true West Coast IPA in a while, and I'd say it's pretty refreshing. We're gonna go tasteability 30, drinkability, you know, it's gonna hit that palate a little hard, but you know, you can still get through it. We'll go 15.
Nice.
You can still get through it.
Just like the podcast, maybe.
That's on the can.
Well, probably with Connor this week. Yeah. Well, that's good. I've got a definitive poetic chemistry double dry hopped IPA.
This one was a gift. We've been going through a bit of a strange time at work right now. I won't dive into too many of the details, but long story short, my union is in the middle of negotiations with our parent company, Sinclair Broadcast Group. It's been a stressful few months, we'll just say. And anyway, one of our nightside anchors who does our late shows was kind enough to buy all of the producers on the nightside that she works with little gifts. And I was very honored that she thought beer was the great gift for me. And she's absolutely right. So she gave me these last week. Shout out Jen Long. And I've been waiting to drink them on the pod very patiently because they look delicious, but I wanted to save them for the pod. Very happy I did. This one, like I said, the Poetic Chemistry Double Dry Hopped IPA, checking in at a very smooth 7.2%, which I'm appreciating on this Monday evening. But it really doesn't taste like a 7.2%. I mean, it's a little bit bitter, but it's definitely kind of surprisingly approachable. It's got a pretty wide fruitiness to it, a little bit sweet. Like I said, it carries kind of that classic bitterness of a double dry hopped IPA, but it's not overwhelmingly bitter. It's still got a little bit of depth of fruitiness to it. It says it is reminiscent of stone fruit, prickly pear. Not sure what makes it prickly or if that's like a distinction of a different pear or not, but
it's a different fruit altogether.
That makes sense. And bright tropical fruit flavors, which definitely mixes well. Really good double dry hop IPA. Like I said, it kind of hits off both boxes that you're looking for. If you like sweeter ones, it does have that sweetness, but it's still got the classic under level of bitterness. Drinkability, I'm going to give it a couple extra points based on how high the ABV is. So I'm going to pop it up to like a 28. Taste, you can definitely taste it too. I'm going to give that a 34. It also smells really delicious. It's got that kind of stone fruit smell to it too. Like you're sniffing some berries, which I appreciate for sure. So
sniffability rating.
You got sniffability. Smellability, yeah. You can definitely smell this beer. I'm a big fan of that. So good stuff. Connor, I know you got a little something prepared as well.
Yeah, I'm far from a surprise. I think every time I've been on this lovely podcast, I've stuck with the tried and true Treehouse, which I'm sticking to.
Hell yeah.
And this one is Smooth Creamsicle, which Ooh. I'm intrigued by because I actually don't think this might be a beer. I think it literally just might be like sugary water because it just straight up tastes like someone melted a creamsicle. I mean, wow. It's a
That's awesome.
6.8% IPA. Doesn't taste like it. Super crisp. I always get concerned. That's why I stay away from like any like the darker beers, especially around like the holiday season, because like you see like the how they describe it on the can. It's like, oh, like it tastes like gingerbread and chocolate.
Peanut butter cup.
Yeah, Reese's peanut butter cup. And then it's like, all right, I feel like I'm drinking something I got from Valvoline. Like this does not taste like a Reese's peanut butter cup. This lives up to the hype. This straight up actually tastes like a creamsicle. Love Treehouse, which is, you know, I'm not really breaking new ground here, but it's fantastic. I actually got this, I think this has been canned back in like the late summer, which harkens back to brighter days when we thought Jake DeBrus was going to score 25 goals this year for the Bruins. He very well might, which maybe not with the Bruins. So harkens back to brighter days. Great beer. In terms of drinkability, taste, the skill's 37, right? That's what we're going with. I'm going to go 37 all around, like really, really enjoyable drink. And it lives up to the promise of like, if you're going to describe that it's a smooth creamsicle drink, I mean, what more can you ask for here? So I'm giving 37s all around.
Hell yeah. I do feel like we don't get enough Treehouse, like as a New England beer podcast. I feel like we've talked about Treehouse quite a bit. I think we did like a whole episode that was named after Treehouse.
We did. I had my buddy Zach on.
Have any of us actually been there? I haven't.
Yeah. So Drew and Lancey and I had some beers of theirs.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Because right before we went to Chili's.
Oh, hell yeah. Dude, the one right down the highway.
So
great spot.
So this was the this is the Deerfield location, and it had just opened, and they weren't doing anything indoors wise, so it was just pickups. So we went and picked up like a case of random beers that they had, and drank some in the hotel. then went to Chili's and then drank some more and recorded an episode.
We watched at Chili's, we watched the Bruins like playoff. Was it playoffs? I think it
yeah,
was
it was, it was time, like yeah. game four or it was like game three or four of the Bruins Islanders series.
Oh, what better place?
Yeah.
Listen, it was the only thing, there's no need to besmirch Chili's though. You know what? Like, there's worse places. You're on the highway looking for some sustenance.
Yeah.
There's worse places.
You could go to Applebee's. You
Chili's
know,
like, is
that is true.
Chili's.
Don't talk about Applebee's on this podcast though, because exactly. Chili's is the unofficial official fast casual dining restaurant of the Brews and Bruins podcast.
Good.
Say that five times fast. Sure.
Shout out Ferns. Connor, one more beer note. I was just telling Drew off pod that I think Definitive, which is the company that makes my beer, is probably my favorite in Portland because they have such a wide range. And one of the things they kick ass at is doing those like weird session fruity ones that like straight up taste like a milkshake or a smoothie.
Yeah.
I was just going through their website and they've got pictures of all the different beers and stuff. And like even the colors, it is mesmerizing, but you can see some of them like have little chunks of fruit in it. Like it's pulpy almost, which sounds weird in a beer, but like if you're going for that, especially in the summer, it hits so well.
Right.
So I really appreciate a brewery that can do that. I can pull that off.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's so much better when it actually lives up to the hype. Because, again, there's nothing more disappointing than when it's like, all right, maybe it kind of tastes like it. Like, but no, like, you have to go all in if you're going to say it's like, you know, like a fruity drink or, again, like creamsicle. Like, you have to commit to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do love creamsicle, too. Oh,
it's classic flavor. I recently had, maybe a couple months ago, had a, this is an orange Cali Creamin', and that was very creamsicle style.
Hell yeah. Love to see it. Well,
I'm going to stick with the trend of all these fancy beers and go with my good old Coors Light with a cap.
Nice.
Like, what is he cracking like that? Coors Light makes sense.
I had no idea where that was going.
My
shouts
to James and Phil who left their Coors Light in my fridge from this weekend. Thank you. And so Coors Light, actually, out of all the light beers, honestly, I do like Coors.
Miller Light.
And Miller Light. For sure.
The unofficial
one,
official light beer of the Brews and Brews podcast.
Look, when you
in conjunction
they brought,
with Chili's.
I did have Miller Light while I was at Chili's.
Presented by Chili's.
The reason I'm drinking the Coors Light is because they brought the Miller Light, but it was all drank. Like, they drank it first.
Hey, well,
you
don't
superior,
have to defend Coors
you know?
Light because it is, you know, Miller Coors is the, you know, parent company of both of those two brands.
Yeah,
so
it's the goat combo of like light beers when you're talking about partnerships there.
Yep.
Or parent companies for sure.
It is the winter 2021 version. But drinkability, man, you can really drink this because it's got a cap, you know. You can take it with your skiing, not that I've ever done that with these before. But you know, if hypothetically wanted to drink on the chairlift, these are perfect for that. So drinkability, I'm gonna go.
I feel like that's pretty regular.
Yeah,
I don't get it today. 63 out of 74. And for tasteability, I'm gonna go 12 out of 74.
Excellent.
You certainly cannot taste that beer.
That is true.
Giving it a Craig Smith out of Jake DeBrusk anyway, speaking of DeBrusk, that was my segue. Jakey D, done dirt cheap, might be done, actually referencing a
Jakey D dealt dirt cheap, maybe?
Dealt dirt cheap. Yeah, ooh. We're gonna, you know, get a nice we'll six rounder and package him with Tuukka Rask and get like three future Hall of Famers because
famously currently a Boston Bruin, Tuukka Rask.
Did you read my column already, Drew? Because that's pretty much what I wrote was going to happen.
Shit. Yeah, we were Connor was a little late tisk tisk for this podcast because he was reporting on Bruins news while me, Cam, and Chris admired Chris's like webcam trouble of it looking slow.
I fixed it.
We were just hanging out.
I did the club. Plug the camera and plug it back in and it's magically okay. Meanwhile, Cam's sitting here with no camera, so I don't know why we're making fun of me for this.
Look, I'm doing the people a favor with this, all right? You don't need to complain about it.
But anyway, DeBrusk, so apparently he is looking for a trade, which
I don't know. I feel like we've talked the potential of DeBrusk being traded for a long time. Just it's off and on. Like Connor kind of had mentioned, you know, is he going to score 25 goals or is he going to suck? But Connor, I want to get your take here first. I think all of us do. What's your take on all this?
Yeah, I mean, is it surprising? Not really, especially after, you know, getting scratched in that game against Vancouver, which Eric Holla gets scratched. Made a lot of sense, right? Wasn't bringing much, and especially defensively was really lacking in that game against Florida. But when DeBrus gets scratched, you're like, all right, is something else going on? Like, I know that, you know, he's been in Cassidy's doghouse before, but when you get sat for a game like that and you look at the other circumstances where, I mean, he's going into a potential contract year, even though he's going into an RFA season. I was looking for a fresh start, and he's kind of back at, maybe not square one, but back in a familiar spot from last year where it's on the outside looking in at regular reps. Is it surprising? No. Disappointing? Sure is. And especially from the Bruins' perspective, it's like, you know, the last hour I've been scrolling through Twitter and seeing, you know, potential trade scenarios, you know, like DeBrusk for Brock Besser or DeBrusk with like Vaakanainen for Tomas Hertl or something like that. And I think people have to be cognizant of the fact that this is not, you know, if this was DeBrusk a few years ago where he's coming off that 27 goal season, yeah, maybe you could get, you know, a pretty impressive one-for-one swap to help you out right now, whether it be, I don't know, another defenseman, a top six guy. That's not the case now. So now the Bruins are kind of stuck in a familiar spot where they're trying to MacGyver their way out of, you know, moving this kind of sunken cost they have and trying to make the most of it, knowing full well, I think it's not like like Vetrano or even like Donato. I mean, Donato got traded. It was like, all right, you got Coyle, which seemed like a great move at the time and got better as kind of it went on. Wherever DeBrus goes, like, is it out of the realm of possibility that he scores like 20 goals, like in the last 60 games of the team? Like, not really. I think he goes to another situation. He could do very, very well. But from the Bruins, it's like, all right, what exactly is the return going to be? Like, I find it be more of whether it's like another, you know, underachieving player like Strome, or are you looking out to like, you know, Yamamoto out in Edmonton? Like, I think it's guys like that you have to realistically look at. Or maybe it's just like moving him for draft capital and just getting that contract off the books. Like, I don't see it being a situation where when you look at his cap hit, his production, the fact that, you know, it doesn't help the Bruins that they have no leverage now with the fact that this trade is now out in the open. Like, everyone knows they're trying to move him now. So it's not like, you know, I don't think we're going to wake up tomorrow and see that he's been moved for Hertl, unless it's, you're also including, I don't know, a first round pick and Lysell or something like that. Like, you know, it's not, you're not getting an impact player in return for DeBrusk unless it's part of a bigger package, which is disheartening that, you know, it seems like his kind of course is sailed here in terms of how he was going to fit in. And also the return is going to be underwhelming considering what his potential is, not just with the Bruins, but wherever he goes next, because I wouldn't put it past him getting back on track in a new system and having a bit of a fresh start. So it's disappointing all around.
Yeah, I think I agree with you for the most part. I think this has got like the classic, like, angry post-trade Bruins fan written all over it, where it's like, oh, they only got a third round, like the Vladar thing, where, like,
yeah,
imagine he does go out and put up 27 goals or a 30-goal season, like, in 2 years, and they were like, why did we trade him when it's the same people who have been calling for him to probably be traded for, like, 5 years at this point? It is, like Connor mentioned, a peculiar spot because you are trading him for his ceiling, and obviously that ceiling is not what it once was, but it's certainly above what we've seen the last couple of years. So any way you spin it, it's probably going to be kind of an underwhelming return, unless Sweeney can really work some magic, which would be surprising in this circumstance. But it is, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously he's had his up and downs here in Boston, but as a pure fan from like a person perspective, it's sad to see, because I feel like he's somebody that has been really easy to root for, even with his struggles and stuff. Just seems like a good kid and somebody who's really wanted it and just hasn't quite been able to get it. You know, we've seen it in streaks. We've seen how well he can play in certain scenarios, but obviously piecing it together has been really difficult for him. And like Connor said, I think he's just kind of run his course here at this point. There's been so many, this could be the year for DeBrusk, this could be the year for DeBrusk, and it just hasn't quite happened. We haven't really seen that breakout beyond a couple of stretches. So I definitely understand why this is happening and why it probably will happen here in the next couple of days, couple of weeks or whatever. But yeah, a little bit of a tough one to swallow for sure at the same time.
Yeah, and I want to take him at his word too that this isn't necessarily like fuck Boston, get me the fuck out of here. Like I think he's tried his best to fit in along the way, and he was pretty honest in the offseason saying like this has been tough. Like every year it's been really tough. Like he expects more from himself. He knows the fans expect more from him, and it just hasn't worked out to the point where, you know, maybe just for his mental health, he needs to go somewhere else and give it another go. You know, at a certain point, you kind of say, like, this isn't really a good fit. He's kind of like, who's the third line center in Boston right now? Like, who's centering his line? Well, we have no idea. It's one of three, four guys. And that's not a situation where a guy who's, you know, kind of trying to recoup his own value and really play to his potential. And he's not an old player. He's like 25. So he still has plenty of time to turn it around and become a valuable player. But, you know, he is at a point in his career where he shouldn't be getting jerked around like that. And I wouldn't assume that he thinks he got no opportunities in Boston, because he did ride on the left wing with David Krejci for a while. And that's an excellent opportunity, and it just didn't work out. And sometimes things aren't a good fit, but just being realistic and saying, this isn't working, give me an opportunity somewhere else isn't necessarily something to, you know, bash a guy for.
Yeah, I wrote an article in March called "Could Jake DeBrusk Benefit from a Trade?" And aha, I called it, because I definitely think he could. And this is it's kind of what I stated in the article, but I think it's true. I didn't predict anything. It was really a question and then me just ranting. A controlled rant. It wasn't very long. But anyway, I definitely think mentally a change of scenery can be really good for a player. I think we've seen a lot of players who weren't in Boston as well, but across the league, who aren't able to meet their full potential with the team that drafted them. Change of scenery, they become maybe a late bloomer as a player, or just whether it's the scheme they're in, the locker room they're in, their city they're in, the living, the lifestyle. I saw that with two notable players, Tyler Seguin and Blake Wheeler. I don't think they would have reached that full potential in Boston for different reasons why they had left and different reasons why they didn't reach that peak potential at Boston, but a change of scenery worked for them. Those are just two examples. And I don't think DeBrusk is going to be like the star player like a Seguin or Wheeler, but I think it could be a similar situation where a change of scenery can really help. But yeah, it is concerning that it is just they held on too long. The Bruins, you can't predict how a player is going to pan out. You see those first two seasons, his rookie year where he had 43 points, and then his sophomore season where he had 27 goals. Like, you see those and you're like, okay, this is the second line winger that we've been needing for almost a decade. And then, you know, a few years later, here we are. Taylor Hall. No David Krejci. But before I just go on to repeat everything y'all said, they just held on too long, which sucks. You can't really, shit on Sweeney for that, because you can't really know after those couple seasons. But as it's dragged along, I think if they moved on from him a season or two ago, then I would have liked to have seen that. But
yeah, and another thing to say about that is, you know, if all the fans are attaching Jake DeBrusk to every single trade rumor that goes out there, like, you got to believe that all of the GMs in the NHL know that this is a guy that the Bruins are kind of hoping maybe people value higher than the Bruins value him.
Yes.
Because, you know, I was, you know, watching the Vancouver game and watching Connor Garland kind of light things up, thinking, man, he was on the Bruins radar this offseason. Like, that would have been sick if somehow they could have worked that out. But obviously, you know, Vancouver taking on that Oliver Ekman-Larsson contract to kind of kick the Bruins out of contention for
not gonna, that. Yeah, not gonna win that sweepstakes when that contract's dangled.
Yeah, but I was still kind of thinking, like, oh, maybe if they had made an early pitch that they've been really good, they could have pulled that off. But, you know, if Jim Benning, who, you know, not the greatest GM in the history of the NHL, had taken the bait a little early on in the offseason, that could have been something good, because big fan of that kid.
yeah, what could have been. It does feel like the other shoe just kind of dropped a little bit. You know, I feel like I don't think anybody was terribly surprised by this. Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe the timing a little bit, but the writing has kind of been on the wall. I think, especially with the scratch. I mean, I will say, like, my first thought with the scratch was like, he did something to piss Cassidy off or something, you know, or maybe there's, you know, some nagging him, or, you know, like a minor injury, give him a night off kind of thing. I definitely wasn't thinking.
Seems a little late in the career to be sending another fucking message to the kid.
Yeah. I didn't think trade right away. But then when I saw it, I was like, oh, I kind of feel stupid for not thinking trade right away also. So
I think it, both sides of that. I'm a little just surprised that it got to the point where his camp is at, like, publicly stating that they want out. I was thinking there's just so many small opportunities or signs over the past couple seasons that it's like, oh, he could be on the move, that eventually it was just going to be, yeah, he's not a career long Bruin and he's going to be traded eventually. I was just surprised it got to the point where he wanted out.
Yeah. I mean, I also think it's one of those situations where not only the fact that he gets scratched, but you look at kind of the opportunity presented to him. And of course, some of the onus is on the player to produce, but you look at, you know, how DeBrusque was going into this year hoping for a clean slate. And, you know, I think, Chris, you kind of noted before that DeBrusque has always been very candid and very accountable for his own game. It's funny, you see now that the trade request is out, people are like, ah, this kid, like, always making excuses, or he's just moody. It's like, no, like, DeBrusque has always been very, very you know, upfront about, you know, when he's been struggling. He, you know, I think is very hard on himself. And how he wants to improve. And he's never, even when he was, you know, almost scoring 30 goals as a 22-year-old, he was still hot in his game then and how he wanted to improve. But I think for him, it's like, you look at the breaking point. It's not just the fact that he was scratched, but, you know, what kind of opportunity was he kind of presented in that spot on the third line? Like, you mapped it out going into the season. You're like, all right, like, clean slate, like, hopefully in a more, you know, a less restricted season where he's not kind of stuck inside all this time, which weighed heavily on him, like most players in the league last year. You know, whether he's with a guy like Arakawa, who looked good in the preseason, you know, a third line role, is able to get easier matchups, made a lot of sense. And even if he's, you know, not the 30 goal guy that he was a few years ago, gives you 15, 20 goals in that third line spot, you'd be more than happy with it. But then whether it's Hala's play tailing off or what have you, it's like, what opportunity do you really have to really thrive or prove his game? Like, I know Cassidy wasn't happy at his defensive coverage, I think, on the Panarin goal on Friday's game, but, like, I don't know. I still think DeBrusque, you look at him, he seemed a lot more engaged in most of, like, his shifts. I think he was even getting some PK work and was looking pretty solid on that. Like, he was moving his feet. Like, I think he was engaged. It's just, like, what opportunity presented itself? Like, you didn't even see, like, as much as people talk about, like, a guy like Sidnico, where it's like, all right, are you going to actually give him a spot? Like, you're not going to try him out, like, on, let's say, like, for Sunday's game. You're not going to see if maybe what Sidnico would do at the 3C and put DeBrusque there and just see if you have anything there, like, with a more offensively gifted guy. Like, who knows? Maybe Sidnico is just not an NHL player, but you still haven't really seen how he'd work, especially with a guy like DeBrusque over an extended sample size. So for DeBrusque, it's like, all right, what else do I need to do? Like, all right, I'm being benched now. Like, I understand, like, maybe the details aren't there all the time and his scoring has dropped off, but, like, he's still a useful player. And I think he, you know, focused on working on kind of the 200-foot part of his game. Like, if you asked me, like, 2 years ago when DeBrusque was scoring those goals, if he could be, like, a dependable guy in a PK rotation, I'd be like, I don't know if that's really cut out for him, but he adopted that role and seemed like he was, you know, getting pretty effective at it. So it's not like he's just been cruising or just, you know, straying away from his game and not working on it. But when you get scratched and you're looking at kind of what the, you know, the bigger pictures of how you fit in this lineup and what the personnel is around you, like, are you really that surprised that eventually he just thinks, you know, probably the best move is just a clean, you know, a fresh start somewhere else? Because you have to imagine he goes somewhere else, whether it's in a top six spot or on a third line with maybe more offensively gifted guys. There's going to be better opportunities out here for him somewhere.
I would love to see him go to Edmonton.
Yeah, that I would not be surprised
for multiple reasons.
Yes.
But
That also is the highest of then, you know, the eventual 30 goal season like that.
Yeah, I feel very confident about that. That's a 35 goal season, and they flip him for like a second rounder, or a first round pick, or something. Yeah,
I think the Bruins have constantly been chasing. All right, who's he going to be good with after Krejci? Because anyone can do great next to Krejci. I could score a goal next to Krejci, but I think. Yeah, it's just been too long of who's going to fit with him.
I just need to see Drew lace up the skates and go to the extra Liga and see what he can do.
Yeah. In the extra Liga, I'll score two. I'll score two goals there, one in the NHL, both with the street hockey stick and tennis ball, because that's how I roll. Any more on Jakey D, done dirt cheap?
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, so far this season, he's been above average expected goals and above average expected goals against. So just getting a little unlucky with some of that puck luck. And, you know, I think putting him on another team, he will be disappointing to Bruins fans.
Yes.
Yep. All righty. Cam, do you remember who we're sponsored by?
I do remember who we're sponsored by. Nope, that's not yet. Sorry. The Bruins and Bruins podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll once again be a winner every time a point is scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team can score, or two score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available yet in your state, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $1 on any team to score, and you can win $100 in free bets.
If they feel score, the you sweat. Score
with promo code THPN.
Like never before.
At DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be one of our older New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. Only new customers, only minimum $5 deposit, $1 wage required. One per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Call the call, 1-800-GAMBLER. Oh, that was a little sloppier.
That sounded like you had a couple of beers before you came back.
My one last week was so good that Court started complimenting me on it afterward. And he said I looked
good in the commercial. It's hard to get a...
Kat said you were good too.
Oh, there we go.
It's hard to get a compliment out of that guy, Court Lalonde, man. I'm his nephew, man. It's hard.
Court was very complimentary of me on that podcast.
Yeah, probably specifically because Drew wasn't there, though.
So yeah, apparently there was some talk about me, is what I saw tweeted. And then on the airplane, I heard like a little bit. I heard, but I didn't hear a lot.
We broadcasting on the airplane? Is that?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Through the speaker, why can't I think of the word? Anyway.
Connor, you have anything you want to plug in SkyMall?
Nah, I'm good. It's tempting, but no, I'm good.
That's where we advertise.
Really cornering the market.
We're trying to. Yeah,
be a Winnipeg's Jets podcast there.
All right, next up. Marshy, Slewfoot or not Slewfoot?
That's a Slewfoot, buddy.
First question.
Woo!
I feel
like,
group?
Well, whether or not you think it's a Slewfoot, it's totally illegal. He literally, like, if you don't think it's a Slewfoot, then he just, like, tossed a guy, and, like, that's not allowed. So, the three games.
Yeah, I was talking to Drew a little about this beforehand. Seen some wild takes on Twitter with this one. I like anything. I've seen the people who are like, oh, fucking classic Marchand. They fucking kill him, you know. Probably not with the Boston accent because it was mostly people from out of town. And then I've seen people in Boston who are
really
like...
Really going after Connor.
Yeah, Jesus. How'd you get audio of my uncle reacting to that?
But yeah, I've seen the flip side of it. People who are like, oh, it wasn't a Slewfoot, totally clean, ridiculous. It's only because it's Marchand, blah, blah, blah. I think it's pretty clearly like 100% a Slewfoot. You cannot do that. As somebody who's played hockey, that's a super dangerous play. I've had that done to me before. Nothing pisses you off quite like, I mean, it's just like a recipe for a concussion, smoke in the back of your head on the ice. He did keep the guy's leg out. He pushed him to kind of tabletop him. You can't do it.
Yeah.
100% a tripping penalty. No questions asked, a slew foot. That being said, I do understand a little bit of the frustration of, like, you look around the league, and I know a lot of people have thrown PK Subban's name around a lot as somebody who's been doing this kind of routinely so far this season. And I get that frustration where the Brad Marchand name probably hurts him there, despite the fact that, as we were discussing last week, and I feel like we may have jinxed it, Chris, but he's not technically a repeat offender at this point because of how long it's been since his last real suspendable incident. So 100% a slew foot in my book. I think you can have some qualms with the punishment based on what the standard has been set by the league, which, if, you know, if you're new to the NHL, this is it. There's no such thing as a standard here. I think it's fair to be upset about that and say, hey, why is he getting three games when other guys are getting fines or that sort of thing? But at the end of the day, I mean, a slew foot's a slew foot, so I don't think you can be too angry about it.
So one of the things I saw was Tim Peel on Twitter talking about, I think it was Lancey that sent us that tweet from Tim Peel, that just for a former NHL ref who famously got an unceremonious end to his career.
Why is he tweeting that?
he was saying that the comparisons to PK Subban aren't fair because he's refereed Subban for a long time and knows him personally and knows that there's no bad intent behind it. And oh boy, we're getting into some real muddy waters if you're trying to judge intent based on
how well you like the guy.
Yeah, how well you know the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people on Twitter are judging intent based on thinking they know Brad Marchand. And I mean, watching the play, it looks like he was trying to go for a clean play and Ekman-Larsson kind of turned one way and he could have just laid off and not finished the hit, but kind of went through with it. And I would say, based on his actions over the last 3 years, that there probably was no ill intent, but also it's the same guy who earlier this week said some not great bullshit to Artemi Panarin. And also this could be kind of like a way to kind of sneak in a couple extra games of suspension without having to really kind of talk about what he said. And the NHL does like to do that. It's not really a Department of Player Safety thing, but Gary Bettman, I wouldn't put it past him to kind of say, hey, nudge, nudge, like maybe we can you know, toss this under the rug, give him an extra couple of games and say that's good. So yeah, I'm not going to question it too much. I think when you get into the game, like you said, Cam, if you're getting into the game of like comparing suspensions and fines and stuff, like we've already had like some really like way worse, like more heinous comparisons of like, oh, this guy got a fine of like $5,000 for being like a horrible racist. But yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah, let's move on from this and we'll get our best player back in a few games against the same team.
Yeah, works out like that. Yeah, I think it's the same thing. Yeah, where I think if you spend all of your energy looking at comparing, you know, different rulings or what have you, it's just, it's not good for your own like sanity in terms of just trying to find the rationale or the course of how the Department of Player Safety looks at those things. But I think you just got to look at it at the just baseline level of Marchand and the history he has. And even though he's not technically listed as a repeat offender, I mean, he's got what, entered today with 6 suspensions, 5 fines. Like, I think that absolutely plays a part in it. I mean, it's pretty much what, it's always good when they do like the video explaining the suspension and they just talk about the play. Then at the end, when they do like the, you know, like, this is targeting, like, this is a slew foot, they always add like 8 different things they didn't mention before. It's like, yeah. Brad Marchand's an ass. Like, they always add the things after it. Like, they didn't even mention it at all. Like,
for Brad, saying Brad plus one game. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they, like all they talked
have
about.
You seen was this the guy's nose?
He's yeah. Built like a villain. Yeah. They start roasting them at the end of it.
Smell them.
But like, the video itself is like 1:40 long. And the first, like, you know, 1:20 is talking about just the play and the intent and what have you of what they ruled in at the end. It was like, he's a repeat offender. I was like, all right, well, that makes sense. Like that yeah. You know, that's all you have to really focus
maybe
on
lead
there.
With
in
that
terms
next
of,
time.
Yeah, you'd probably lead with that, but At the end of the day, whether you're comparing it to like Subban or what have you or other situations, comes down to it. Like, I thought he was going to get maybe a game or so for just the play in question, but three games was like, Like, you, all it takes is to look back at him. Like, yeah, okay. Like, as you said, like, you look at just kind of the rap sheet that he's had, and even though it's, you know, a few years ago that he really piled those on at a pretty steady clip, he's kind of moved on from it. But even if it was, you know, wasn't an intent to do that to Ekman Larson, like, you still got that weight around you from, you know, what you've done before. It's not like you can just absolve from it, even though I think he has focused on kind of improving his game. He still plays with that edge. He still has got that reputation, and it's something that, considering what he's done in the past, you kind of have to live with it. And again, it's not worth your own sanity to start, you know, doing the deep dive into what the, you know,
into Tom Wilson. And
yeah, exactly. You just go down a slippery slope and it solves absolutely nothing except, you know, making your hair fall out and driving you crazy, like trying to figure out like the intent behind it. It's just, Marchand's got a rap sheet, you know, and, you know, he's going to have a shorter leash than most other players when it comes to a situation like that. He's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. So it's three games. Unfortunate, the Bruins could really use him, especially for that Saturday game against Tampa.
Yeah.
But it is what it is at this point. He's got to move on. And hopefully Jake DeBrusk maybe will get some top six reps in what might be his last couple of games, if he even plays a game. Who even knows? True. Now it's a ridiculously awkward situation for everyone involved.
Yeah.
By the time Marchand is back, DeBrusk will be facing against him as in a Canucks sweater.
Yeah,
you heard it here first.
Vancouver Canucks sending good over whoever the hell they have on their fourth line.
Yeah, I do like Mott. He's a good little player, but yeah. I don't think that's who you'd imagine would be the guy going in return for DeBrusk. But
yeah.
Something I will say on intent, it's just so hard to judge that, but whether it was intentional or you get caught up in the heat of the moment and pull move like that, like a slew foot, or you can think of things similar, like hits from behind and just dirty plays like that. It's not excusable. And I think three games is justifiable, but my question is, you know, you kind of touched on it, Connor, how he piled up all those suspensions and fines. It seems like a while ago. And there was a couple of years ago where it was talked about in the media too, how he was going to change his style of play, how he was going to play a little bit cleaner, play a little bit smarter. And that's where we really saw the Marchand, the all-star Marchand really emerge, where he's consistently putting up these numbers. What do you think this kind of says about that? Like, is it him falling into his old ways at all? Or maybe it was just like a small hiccup. I'm wondering what you guys think.
I mean, I view it more of like, I don't think the intent was like, I'm going to, you know, put him in a situation, Ekman Larson, where he's going to get injured. I think it was more of just a bang bang play, and it was an unfortunate. Like, I don't think he was going into it with the intent of slew footing the guy. Whereas you look at some of his prior suspendable incidents where it's like going to situation, you had that split second, I think, recognition of like what you're going to do, and like, all right. Or, you know, it's tough. It's very tough to like some of those like,
submarines are very
some of those are like, oh yeah, that's about right. Where I think now, I think, as you said, Drew, especially I think after that, those 2018 playoffs against Tampa, where I mean, he had like the looking incidents and stuff, I think he did kind of take it to hot, whether he's talking to you know, Chara, Cassidy, Bergeron, all kind of had a sit down with him. And I think for Marchand, it means a lot to him in terms of like not just being labeled as that. And as much as he's a guy that I still think thrives off of being, you know, the fly in the ointment, the guy who will drive the opposition crazy, I think he wants to look at his career kind of down the road, I imagine, and view it more of not just being this, you know, pest to this guy that drove, you know, other teams crazy in that regard, or kind of the controversial things he's done. He wants to be regarded as a great team player, a guy that was, you know, very well our Hart Trophy finalist, a guy who's arguably the best left wing in the game for the last couple of years. And I think that does mean a lot to him as he grows older and kind of looks back on his career. And as much as, you know, he's a great guy to talk to, a guy that, you know, is very chummy and likes to, you know, keep it loose, I think when he looks at kind of the big picture, it's something that he's very sincere and focused on, is kind of carving out that legacy and being remembered as more than just the dude who, you know, used the Sedin brothers' face as a speed bag, or all those things. Like, of course, it's part of his career. It's always going to be what I'm sure hammered guys that Sullivan Tab mentioned first with Marchand, not like, you know, the 100-point season, but it's him just being a pain in the ass. But I think for him as a player, when he looks at the overall body of his work and how he's elevated his game, I think for any player like that who's gone from, you know, a fourth line cast off to, again, like the best left wing in the game, I think you want to be remembered for more than just being the guy who makes all the highlight reels for licking a dude in the face, something like that. I think that does mean a lot to him for any player that I think that has put in that work to get to that spot. So, yeah, it's a tough situation, you know, for him in that, you know, again, it's of his own doing, right? Like of the kind of rap sheet that he's had. But I think it does mean a lot to him in terms of how he wants to be remembered and carving out this kind of cleaner, what have you, legacy, as opposed to kind of just keep on going back to that. Like, I don't think he relishes, you know, having this be the discourse now with his career. I think he'd much rather be making the highlight reels for great plays. And, you know, he'd rather be like the discourse of like, you've gone from being a pain in the ass to being, you know, an all-star caliber player, as opposed to now it's same thing. Like, oh, it's typical Marchand. Whereas I think for, you know, people who've watched him the last couple of years, you know, that really hasn't, he's not been the same player he's been in years past. So
yeah, that's kinda...
I think he's always fighting that narrative, I think, is the issue. And it's going to be tough to kind of get past until he eventually retires. It's just, you've done enough in the past that it's going to stick with you inevitably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of exactly what I was going to say. I think for people like us who have been watching him on a gamely basis for the last however many years, like I think of Brad Marchand as, like Connor said, a potential Hart Trophy candidate, one of the best 200-foot players in the game right now after playing with Bergeron for this long. Somebody who, like Chris said, is the most valuable player on this Bruins team at this point. But I also understand that people outside of the Bruins circle still see him as, oh, he's an aggravator. And, you know, not that they totally write off his skill. He's an aggravator who can also score, who can also do this. But
makes him more aggravating.
That stigma attached to him. And I get it. I mean, it is Brad Marchand, like Connor said, he's earned that reputation. The time has kind of come in a way to pay the piper. But at the end of the day, also, he's got such a dynamic game that he doesn't want to be remembered for that, especially at this point in his career. I do think, going back to Drew's question, like Connor said, I think it was just kind of a little blip in the radar here. This is a guy who, at the end of the day, you know, as skilled a player he is, he still does have to play with that edge. He needs to be Brad Marchand to be Brad Marchand. Sounds obvious, but he's not somebody that can play a Patrice Bergeron, not very aggressive style kind of game, like where it's like if he makes a hit, you're like, oh shit, Bergeron just hit somebody and still be effective. That's never going to be Marchand. He's always going to be getting in people's faces, hopefully not licking them, which I never
taking hits on Ryan Reeves and shit like that.
Yeah, he has to do that. He has to go at Ryan Reeves to fire himself up, and I'm fine with him doing that as long as it doesn't, you know, you don't want it to turn into this kind of shit. But he has to play on that edge in order to be effective. So you're always going to kind of toe that line. I think you look at the last 4 or 5 years of his work, and this is the only blip where, you know, it's not great, but at the end of the day, there are far worse things that happen across the league several times a year. And if this is what it takes once in a while, I don't know, maybe I'm an asshole here, but like, that's fine with me if he gets one slew footing thing every couple fucking years at this point. You know, you take the good with the bad there. Again, if you want him to be as effective as he is, this is what's going to come with it for a guy like him. Obviously you don't condone it, but you have to kind of take that 3-game suspension as a price of playing with a guy like him, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys brought up kind of like personal accomplishments and stuff and kind of how he views himself. Because one, I do feel like he's not a super selfish player or anything like that. He is a distributor. Like, all you have to do is look at that disallowed empty net goal that he kind of gave to Patrice. Like, very much a team guy, definitely deserves that A on his chest. But also, I do think it does mean a lot to him to get to maybe that 40-goal season. And he's come close a few times. And when you look at it in those seasons, like, oh, he was suspended for 7 games, suspended for 5 games. Like, he came within 1 goal of a 40-goal season 1 year, and he was suspended for, I think, 5 games that season. You got to think that he might have scored a goal in one of those 5 games. So, yeah, I think he'll probably look back on things like that with a little bit of regret. And, I mean, he's got 9 goals in 18 games so far, right on pace for 40 goals, and you missed 3 games. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Hope he comes back out of it. And, I mean, dude's absolutely insane. He's playing so well. So, I think there's a really good chance he gets to 40 goals, but it sucks to see that he's missing these games during a crucial part in the season where you're kind of trying to make up those four or five games in the, not in the standings, but in the, in the games played sheet.
I think just to show you how well he's played lately, I missed the Vancouver game actually, so I had to watch the highlights after.
We're playing
a big beer league playoff game. But the one text that I got about the game from my dad's buddy was just everybody just climb on Marchand's back, which that's the type of player he is right now, where he can carry a team like that. And like Chris said, for his personal, you know, if he misses out, if he scores 39 goals this year, he's gonna be pissed. But at the same time, if the Bruins miss the playoffs by two fucking points this year, or you know, if they end up with a tough draw, you know, whatever it is, that's going to be something where you look back and you're missing that game changer from your lineup. So it's not the perfection line. It's not the erection line without Brad Marchand. So
good save. Yeah. What is he? The E in the erection line? So it'd just be the erection.
The head of the erection, if you will.
It's the erection line. Marshawn puts the E in erection.
That'll be the Nesson promo when he comes back in the lineup for the Vancouver game on the road.
Yeah, let's call up Logan and
Lauren. Yeah, Nesson late at night.
I love the ice level. Erection line.
It's a 10 o'clock game. It's fine.
I think I will just say on the reputation front that as was already kind of touched upon, I mean, that never escapes you. And I'm just like, Marchand's thing has always been those like little dirty plays, like those slew foots and stuff. It's never been the, okay, I'm going to, you know, hit you from behind. I'm going to take a headshot at you. I mean, I believe he actually did have a headshot, has one on his criminal record. But it's not like the Tom Wilson, like 20 headshots in his career. You know, it's not that much, but and it's not excusable or anything, but you know, when it comes to Twitter and you see all this Tom Wilson shit, Marchand's name gets brought up, and it's like I've been able to say like, no, but he's changed, man. Like Marchand, that's the old guy, you know, that's old young stupid Marchand, not anymore. He's been clean, and now I can't use that anymore, and I'm sad. But anyway, on a happier note, is there anything happier? Any hot takes anyone wants to toss out there? Are the Bruins going to win the cup? Who will win the cup in 2028? Let's go.
2028.
I think by then the Coyotes will be ready.
I mean, they very well could. No, Buffalo's.
Honestly, the team that is on pace right now is Ottawa. They're the perfect team that was like, this is going to be the season that Ottawa kind of turns it on, and they haven't. Yeah. So they're still going to get another good draft pick.
Yeah.
The problem with Ottawa too is that I always feel like they've always have a relatively good record of like drafting talent, end up like getting like good players. Like even though it's not worked out for them, they've still got pieces in place for, all right, as you said, they get another draft pick, work towards it. But then they get to a point where it's like, all right, this team looking good. And then their owners are like, all right,
trade
like,
Mark Stoner, Carlson.
Yeah, exactly. Like you get maybe one year where it all comes together and they can make somewhat of a run, but then it all just goes to shit right away, which is too bad. Because again, like whether it's Stone or Carlson or all those guys, it's like, I mean, people look at that 2017 playoff series against the Bruins and like, I mean, Eric Carlson just went sicko mode in that series. Like that was just ridiculous how he played.
But like, where I read off the roster of that team, and it's just like filled with guys who like turned into good players.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. And again, that's even before like Stone really elevated his game, but then you trade him for, I mean, what was it like? Brandstrom is like, was the key guy back there who's like in the lineup now. It's always funny when you look at like the Bruins being tied to like that, those Mark Stone rumors, which like, goddamn, like they would have won two cups if they got Mark Stone, but like all you heard was like, oh, it's gonna be this crazy ask, like you really want to give up Urho Vakanainen and like one of these guys to Nika for Mark Stone, and it's like yeah, he's really good, yeah, like again, doesn't, and even if Vakanainen and Sanika end up being legit players, which it's one of those things where it's like, all right, yeah, you probably win a cup. Oh, actually, you probably don't. You do win a cup in 2019 if you had Mark Stone that year. But
So who are we thinking? I need an official team.
2028
Stanley Cup champions.
I'm going LA.
Yeah,
still going LA.
I'm gonna ride with my Red Wings.
Oh, famously, Chris's Red Wings.
That's a good pick. Actually, I wouldn't put it past them. I would say a Kraken, but Ron Francis told me that team's gonna be shitty. that team sucks.
They could go Vegas and just like switch it all up after a few years.
They really could, because Vegas like will just deal all those guys with absolutely no regard for their emotions or anything in the next year or so, and if it eventually all goes to hell.
Quebec.
Yeah. That's a good call.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon with Detroit. I have faith that they'll get something.
There you go.
Good market. They actually got like back. Yeah.
The eyes are playing.
I'm gonna say San Jose Sharks, and Joe Thornton gets his cup because he's finally
as the assistant
like behind the bench, like he already.
Mostly.
Trainer,
he's like, got. He's getting like 5 minutes a night.
You're not committing to actually play.
Yeah, yeah. He'll player be coach. Like a fitness dude. He'll be like, look, this is how you grow your beard for the playoffs.
Emergency this backup.
He's the player development manager. Whatever.
He develops the player development managers. Yeah. Anyway, Connor, shout out your stuff. Where can people find your stuff and escape from Mars?
You can find my stuff over at bostonsportsjournal.com, where we have a couple stories up today after this very slow news day regarding Brad Marchand and Jake DeBrusk. And I'm sure we'll have plenty more in the coming days as we talk about who the Bruins could potentially acquire for a guy like DeBrusk, where they go from there, who slots in for Brad Marchand. All that stuff over at bostonsportsjournal.com. We've had a couple of features already drop, including one with Jake DeBrusk getting Oreos thrown at him, which, thank Christ, I wrote that story earlier this month and not now. Yeah. But we have kind of features like that all dropping over the next couple of weeks as well. So subscribe to bostonsportsjournal.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at ConnorRyan_93, where I usually just tweet nonsense, as is everyone else on Twitter. So you can find me at either spot.
Or the local Dunkin'.
That's our
Twitter. The local Dunkin'.
Probably the local Dunkin'.
Yes, when in doubt.
I don't know. If you tweet nonsense, Connor, then I have no idea what I fucking do.
It's so wrong, it's right, Drew. It's all right.
I tried to start a GoFundMe for me to afford the airline internet to watch the Bruins game.
It's warranted, man. That stuff, it's like, it's one of those ones where you get it and it's like 5 minutes of free Wi-Fi, and then it's like, would you like $49.99 for an extra 30? It's like, no, I can't buffer anything. I couldn't play a Sega.
That'll get me through the third. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't go to OT.
I can't run like a Sega Genesis game on this bandwidth, yeah, but I'm paying $49.99.
Firstborn child, yeah.
Did you start a petition to get
Pasternak into like in The Mandalorian? Yeah. I wonder how that's going, honestly. I think I got like 10 signatures, man.
Imagine like they did the whole thing where he won't take off his mask, he finally does, and it's just fucking David Pasternak.
It'd be also just hysterical, because it would be so many Star Wars fans who would be like, who the fuck is that guy? But there's like a 0.1% of Twitter who'd be like, holy shit.
Died instantly. Heart attack for all of them.
Yes.
Oh, man.
One can dream. Always, man.
Yeah, thank you very much, Connor.
Thank you guys for having me. Always happy to talk Bruins.
We'll go shorter length of time between inviting you on next time, and we'll try to invite you on more than a day in advance.
It'll probably be like really, really bad.
When the DeBrusk trade actually happens, just hit me up. We'll do a quick reaction post.
Yeah.
It's good to be timely.
All right, thanks, man.
Yep. All right. See you guys.